Thank you so much, everyone. My name's Karen. I'm an alcoholic. It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. Let's do a little recap. Last week, I introduced the idea of the four absolutes and putting them into a daily inventory to keep you on top of what's going on in your life. And are you, what you're about to say or do, is it absolutely honest? And we talked a little bit about that honesty. I see somebody put them up on the board over there. That's pretty neat. And is it absolutely pure of thought? Do I have good motive behind? What's the motive under the motive under the motive? Because we discover in that fourth step inventory that we operated with some pretty self-serving motives. And this is just one of those tools that I have found that really helps me stay right with my God and be able to talk to my sponsor about it, so that ongoing fourth and fifth is a process for me that continues to this day. Is what I'm about to say or do absolutely unselfish? You know, we're selfish people. The disease of alcoholism is a selfish disease. We have a formula in our head, and it's me, me, me. Very, very rarely. And unless this practice of these steps, especially 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, becomes integrated into your life, that formula won't change to God, you, me. It's the only thing I have found that allows it to change for me. You know, we talked about, is what I'm about to say or do absolutely loving and kind? I don't know about you, but when I came here, my motives were not necessarily loving and kind. They might have looked that way, but they internally were not that way. And I was driven by self. So we touched on a lot of that. And today we're going to talk about 6, 7, 8, and 9, I hope. And if we don't, we'll just continue it next week. But before we do that, I just wanted to recap that we've got ego and spirit, constantly ego and spirit. And some of these days I'm agnostic and the ego rises, and some of the days I'm not. I'm on the beam with the power and the spirit rises. But now I have to be on guard with that. But I need to know me well enough in order to do that. I need to be able to feel the rumble, you know, to be able to sense it coming up. So that I listen to the second voice, not the first. You know, my first voice is always wrong, right? So on page 75 in Into Action, it has some beautiful fifth step promises I just want to review a little bit. Because they're asking me to admit to myself, to accept of myself, and to approve certain things before I reach this. Do I accept that I'm an alcoholic? Do I admit that I'm powerless? And do I approve of me today in all those aspects? You know, and it took a little while before that approval stepped in for me. It took to the end of the ninth step, but we're not there yet. But it says we pocketed our pride, my ego. I put it aside. We opened up the meeting with it, set aside everything I think I know for a new experience with the power, for a new experience, right? So we pocketed our pride. I illuminated every twist of character that I'm able to at that time. What my recovery that I can share with you is that's been an ongoing truth. You know, I understand it as I understand it. And I can admit it as I understand it. And it didn't come all at once. Thank God I didn't experience the truth all at once. Thank God it came in the pieces that God knew that I could handle a little bit at a time. Because the truth was really hard, some of the stuff that happened in the past. And I was still driven by the things I had done. My sponsor kept reminding me, you never would have done the things you had done had you not been drinking and drugging. I would not have done them in today. But back then, you know, the mental twist, the things that happened where I just go, what the heck? You know, I don't care. And I had an attitude of indifference. You know, I just didn't care. And I started to care as I started to learn about me in the fourth and fifth step, and 6 and 7, which we're about to enter in. And this is why, because this is really hopeful. It said, once I've taken this step, withholding nothing, tried my best to tell her everything I could the first time around. There were things I purposely didn't say, paid a price for that, but purposely didn't say because I didn't know how to say it. That was the truth. Didn't know how to tell her some of these things. But the things I could say, it said I had a feeling of being delighted. I could look the world in the eye. And that was something that's really important walking into 6 and 7, that I could finally look you straight in the eye and be okay with me, regardless of what had happened. I could be okay with me. I was able to be alone in perfect peace and ease. So I had fleeting moments of that. They didn't happen all at once. They were fleeting, but they were there. Perfect peace and ease, right? Fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator, and we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but I begin to have a spiritual experience. I begin to feel something different. I begin to feel that rumble stopping, and my mind's not racing, and I'm able to be present right here, right now. And being present right here, right now is where my God is right here, right now. Feeling of the drink problem has disappeared. I couldn't believe it. I hadn't had a drink in 7 months the first time I did this. I couldn't believe it. 7 months without a drink. Holy crow, right? So it did disappear, and we feel we're on a broad highway. Well, before I did this 4 and 5, and there's just a few pages that describe how to do that, I was on a narrow path, alone and afraid. Now I'm on page 75, I'm on a broad highway. That's a big difference. That's a big shift in perception. That in itself is a spiritual experience, that shift in perception. All of a sudden, I'm feeling a lot differently than I did before. And I wasn't on a narrow path alone and afraid. I had hope here. Even though there's still a lot of work to do, even though there's still a lot of amends to make, even though there's still a lot of rights to be righted and wrongs to be dealt with, I felt there's hope for a person like me. I felt there was hope. And the promises, I love these promises because they give me, I am no longer alone and afraid. I know that there's an answer somewhere, somehow, somebody will talk about it, we'll get to it. But there's hope for that. I didn't have that before. So then it told us that we return and we find a place where we can be quiet. This is very important because it speaks to a personal review of what you've looked at. You know, a personal review, that we thank God from the bottom of our heart, we get to know Him better. Notice that it says that after you do that work. It doesn't say that you're going to have that first, because you don't, right? So we turn to that page, which contains the 12 steps, that's on 59, but I'm not going to turn there right now. This is what I want to tell you, is we're building an arch through which we walk free. It doesn't say relief. It doesn't say I'm going to be relieved. It says I'm going to be free. That's huge for me. I get freedom here. And the freedom's going to come in the next few things that we're going to talk about. And it's going to ask you some questions. Is your work solid? Are you doing the best job you can possibly do, right? Stones properly in place, meaning that did I do everything I could do? Did I say everything I could say? And I realized there that I hadn't, so I went back and did that, right? Have I skimped on it? Absolutely. I skimped the first time around. It says if I skimp on that foundation, I'm going to have problems. And it's absolutely true. So it says, have I tried to make mortar out of sand? So it's using a building analogy. So have I tried to do that? I don't know. This is a meditation about your fifth step. Then it asks us on the next page, right? If we can answer to our satisfaction that we did those things, right? That we did those things. Then we look at step 6, right? We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Here's the hugest question I have for you today. Do you believe that willingness is indispensable? I can't give it to you. I wish I could. There's so many people that I just wish I could give them the willingness I have. It has to come from within you. Are you willing? It's indispensable, meaning that you can't live without it. You can't be without it going forward. If so, we're ready to let God remove from them all things we admitted we are objectionable. On that four-step list, I found a lot of things that were objectionable. I found the lying, cheating, scamming, manipulation objectionable in my life. I found my relationships that were shattered objectionable in my life. I found that the things that I had done and said were objectionable in my life, but I didn't know how to do it different. You know, and I was like that hole in the donut for a little bit. I didn't know, well, what steps do I need to take next? And my sponsor put it really clear and simple with step 6. She said, don't do what you want to do. well, then what do I want to do? So that, you know, that became a conversation. Don't do what I want to do. So he says it says right here, we let God remove from us all the things that have been objectionable. God has to remove them. Just like he removes the alcohol or the drugs or the food or the gambling or whatever your issues might be. He will take everything from us. He'll take them, every one. If we cling to something, okay, we need another prayer. We ask God to help us be willing. So step six is all about this defect defense removal. But it has to be, I don't know how to say it. I think step six summed up is a spiritual state of mind. Nothing really changed on the outside. It's all my attitude on the inside. Mm-hmm. It's the sacred awareness, right? That inside the soul suddenly drives from the inside out. Suddenly used to be I'd take a drink. Suddenly I'd find a way to make you do what I wanted you to do. But all of a sudden it's shifting around where suddenly is an inside out. And suddenly it was like, how you doing? Mm-hmm. The desire to do that was lifted from me. The desire to do the things that I had done before was lifted from me. I had to take on that certain attitude, though, we talked about. Mm-hmm. I had to be willing to do things differently. I had to be willing to take things differently. So change has a lot to do with being willing to get rid of. It's like a hot air balloon that goes up, right? Then that gets a pop and then comes right back down, right? So what's my problem that won't let me deal with step six? You know, I met a woman several years ago. I'm doing the deal, you know, I'm doing commitments. And I had a commitment that I took every Tuesday. I'd pick up people with this guy. We'd pick up people from the homeless shelter and take them to our home group meeting, which was at the time in Parsippany. And I picked up this woman, and she'd been in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. You know the story. In and out. And I was sitting with her, and I'm talking to her, and I said, okay, so what's the difference? I've done all those fourth and fifth step lists. And I said, I looked at her and I said, have you ever done a sixth step? And she said, no. And I said, okay, I will work with you on that. And I did. I stopped by the next day. We talked. And then we went to pick her up by the next week, and she had overdosed. She went back out and OD'd. She had never done a thorough step six. Six and seven are ongoing. They're going to continually be what we work at as we understand the truth, right? It's a continual process. So what stops me is the denial that I need to do this, right? The defects and instincts work hand in hand. You know, if I'm feeling some kind of way, I want relief. I don't want to wait it through, right? Some kind of way. So what's my solution going to be? Well, I have to trust that the process, like I'm a person who's been through this, who believes firmly in the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can tell you that my life totally changed. I became obedient to the steps, despite that I am not the obedient kind of person. You know what I mean? Because in our 12 and 12, it says, any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults has come a long way spiritually. Meaning, I'm going to be willing to try. Because my life's objectionable. And I admit that to you, right? And I find things that are objectionable along the road, even today. I'll find something like, oh my gosh, I was telling you guys a couple weeks ago about my Christmas tree deal. It's up. I'm not really the happiest camper, but it does look pretty, I'll admit. So then it also says that we of AA obey spiritual principles first because we must, right? Because we're going to drink again. And then ultimately, because we love the kind of life such obedience brings us, right? Mm-hmm. Great suffering and great love are AA's disciplinarians. Think about that. We don't need anything else. I don't need to be a sponsor who tells you what to do. And you can ask anyone I sponsor, I don't tell them what to do. I might suggest something you might want to consider, but I don't tell them what to do. I had one of my sponsees call me and said, so will you use sponsor power, please, and tell me what the future looks like? Oh, that was funny, right? Yeah. I'm like, no, can't do that. Only God can help us with that. So, as always, there's a prayer that I say along with step six. You know, I get blocked, like we all do. And I do want to obey spiritual principles first, you know. And I might be having a lack of trust in an area. It's not uncommon. You get off the bean a little bit during the holidays. You get a little bit overtired, right? So this prayer helps a lot for me. And this is my form of step six. And like I mentioned to you, develop your own prayers because this is a personal experience that's going to come from your heart. Okay, and it says, God, thank you for removing my fear and showing me the truth about myself. Thank you. Because if I know the truth about me, then I have some place to work from. If I'm in delusion about me, I have nowhere to work from. And if I'm in delusion, I'll believe the illusion of what's going on and act out in my defense. I don't want to be that way. I'm much better off about the truth. I might not like it, by the way. So I always ask God to help me stay willing to let go of the things which continue to block me from you. You know, there'd be somebody that I meet and I really don't care for that person. I don't know why. I have absolutely no idea why. It's a prejudice. So God, let me set aside the prejudice so I may have a new experience with you. And I have met these people along the way. Like I'll meet a very loud person. They're kind of loud. And I'm like, whew, too much, you know. And I mean, this is the very person that probably has the message for me. That message I hope that I need to hear from. Or the person in the meeting is like, oh no, they're not sharing again, are they? And they're the person that's going to give you the answer to what you need to hear today. So the minute that kind of stuff comes in, I ask God to take that away. I don't want to be judgmental. I don't want to be prejudiced against anybody. But it's my human nature to be that way. So I have to ask God to take it, right? Grant me your grace. I ask for God's grace, right? And remove objectionable characteristics, defects and shortcomings, so I can accept you exactly as you are. So anyone that comes into my home or into my life, I can accept totally just as they are. Because I want to be accepted just as I am. So guess what? They want to be accepted that way too. So what's the principle that's going to help you here? It's willingness. So that now that you accomplished an inventory of all the good and not so good aspects of your character, right? That's what we've done. And are you willing to change them? All of them? Right? The important part of the step six principle is the willingness to let go of old behavior. It might be as simply as being on time. You make an appointment with somebody and you show up 15 minutes late. Oh, that's inconsiderate. You know, I had a sponsee who did that all the time to me. Right? And finally, at the end of a session, I waited 2 hours one time for her. And at the end, I said, hey, you know what? I really want to talk about inconsiderate. And she said, you didn't waste so much time talking about that. I'm like, oh, my God. So I just want to talk about how we have to be considerate of people's time. You make an appointment or they call you, call them back. I mean, just simple things. Simple, kind things that are gracious to each other. The way you want to be treated is the way we treat other people. So that promise comes true here that I'm going to lose interest in selfish things and I'm going to gain interest in others. And that's absolutely flipped. It used to be all about me. Now it's become all about you. So like when I find out I need help with something, I'm able to say, hey, you mind? Can you help me? I never would ask for help before. So what can I practice to help me in step six? Well, I have to give up my judgments. What do you think about that? Give up all my judgments. Because your judgment's going to reflect poorly on you. So think about the things just today. Did you judge somebody poorly? A situation? Did you say, nah, not doing that? You know, before you even investigated what it might be for you. You have to root out the fear there. Fear is just another word for selfish. But you have to root it out. You have to say, why did I think that way? What's that all about? So what aspects of my personality don't I like there? Do I end up lying to cover up the fact that I just don't want to go? Simply say, I don't want to go. You know? Your judgments are going to imprison you and keep you right back into a four-step problem. Your judgment, you'll be doing the same thing over and over and over. They're going to hinder having good relationships. You're not trustworthy to others. You know, that's a big word we use here in the program. Oh, I don't trust. Well, are you trustworthy? Become trustworthy. Become trustworthy. So when you say you're going to be somewhere, be there. If you say you're going to do something, do it. If you say you're going to show up, show up. So when you call and say, I can't, be there. They know that that's the truth, right? They know you're not lying. They know that you're not doing something else. Or how about this? You make a date with somebody and you're planning on doing something that could be as simple as going out to eat. And they call you up and they've changed their mind because they have a better thing in mind to do than be with you. Don't do that to somebody. You know, so you made a plan, go keep it, right? So abandon your box. Your box of judgment keeps you stuck and will keep you stuck in old behavior. It will keep you limited to having the experience that your God wants you to have. He's promised you the broad highway. He's promised you an opportunity to have the life you want. So you're going to have to abandon what's made you comfortable. It's totally an uncomfortable proposition. I get it. But abandon those limitations. And you're going to find that you're going to feel so much comfortable, peace, and ease than you ever did before. Because you're not limiting yourself to what you think you know. Right? That set aside prayer, set aside everything I think I know. You can say it about everything. Set aside everything I think I know about the holidays for a new experience with my family. Imagine that. Oh, I don't know. You know, I know my family's pretty deranged, so I'm trying on that one. But it's interesting. They all show up and they all want to be there because I have a different attitude towards them. I'm very judged by them because I don't drink, and they drink like fish. That's okay. I don't drink. And I just love them for who they are. So step 7, 6 and 7, they walk hand in hand. Step 7 is about asking for that freedom. Step 6, we're talking about those character defects of character. You're talking about your behaviors, your actions, your attitudes. Well, step 7 is going to talk about shortcomings, and shortcomings are falling short of your chosen ideal. I want to be an honest person, right? I want to be considerate. I want to be generous of spirit. Right? I want to be in faith and not in fear. I want to have courage. Those are the aspects of shortcomings, falling short from my chosen ideal. The ideals I want is to be the best version of me I can be. Right? I fall short of those sometimes. And to support the falling short, I create chaos in my old behaviors. So humility, Bill Wilson says that humility is the solid foundation of all virtues. And humility is the truth about who I am. This position, taking this position, requires constant thoughtfulness and a true commitment, right, to being honest, to being courageous, and to being humble. It's also all about moving forward, right? So what stops me from doing that? What stopped me from doing that was my arrogance. It's pretty arrogant. Didn't think I needed to do this. Thought I could do it automatically. Well, obviously that wasn't true, right? So what is the solution? Step 7 says keep it simple. Dr. Bob talked about it all the time. Keep it simple. Don't make chaos. Keep it limited. Do one thing at a time. Keep it simple. So the prayer that we have in our book is absolutely amazing. I'm going to take it apart a little bit. So it says to us, I humbly offer myself to God. I humbly, that means with all the truth I know, I offer myself to the higher power that I understand to do with me as he would. Because God's got a plan. My higher power, my higher self has a plan with me, for me, in partnership with me, right? I place myself in his care. Because when I'm in my care, watch out. That's all I can tell you. I want to be in the care of direction of my higher power. My higher source, right? I admitted for the very first time, that of myself I'm nothing. What I am without my higher power is I look at my life today with the spirit that I've discovered is within me. I look at myself today with it, and I look at my life without it. My life without it was on that road, lonely and dark. My life with it is amazing. It's sparkly, you know, it's kind of like all the Christmas lights. It has a lot of joy. It has a lot of happiness. I'm relaxed. I don't need anything to be relaxed. I don't have to go out and find that. I can find it within me. Do we struggle? Of course we do. Do we have doubts and hesitations and things not working out the way we want them? Yeah, but it's only momentary. You know, I don't open up that rabbit hole. Instead, I place myself unreservedly with my God because I know it will change shortly. Maybe not right here, right now, but it will come. It will come. I ruthlessly, 4 and 5 is a ruthless look, faced what I did, the truth of what happened. I was willing to do that. And I had to have a sponsor dig it out of me, because a lot of it I couldn't see without her help. I couldn't see this without her, right? So then I asked him to take, on page 13 in our big book, it says, God takes some root and branch. Everything out. Root and branch, right? It says, I'm willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Who the heck wanted the bad of me? Nobody. So I pretended I was good. Right? And inside, I wasn't good. But God wants all of me. All of that. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what it looked like. Doesn't matter what happened. That was then. Now is now. Right? I ask God that he removes from me every single defect of character that we've discovered, right? The lying, the cheating, the scamming, the grandiosity, the arrogance, all of that, negativity, all of it. For everything, take everything that stands in my way of my usefulness to you. Now, if I'm walking around with that attitude, my friends really don't know what to say with me because I'm pretty arrogant. Kind of unapproachable, I think the word is, right? And how can they be relaxed around a personality like that? And top it off with having an 8-type personality where I've got perfection up here, no one feels like they measure up. And I did that to people. Not intentionally, but that's what happens when I don't understand that they're who they are and I'm who I am, you know? So I asked them to remove every single defect that stands in my way of usefulness to you, right? And my fellows, and I grant me the strength to be honest, the strength to be courageous, the strength to be truthful, the strength to do the next right thing. I ask for that. I ask for that kind of strength. I feel like lying, I ask for the strength to be honest. I feel like not showing up, I ask for the courage to answer that phone or open that piece of mail or talk to that person. I ask for the strength to do that. Because on my own, I'm not apt to do that. I'm more apt to hide out. Right? So I ask for that as I go out to do his bidding. So when I become aware that the rumble is working and I'm asking for freedom, I want to be free from that. Now in today's life, it took a while, a lot of practice. 6 and 7 is a lot of practice. Practice, practice, practice. Keep practicing. Now as a matter of course, I'm more likely that than this. I'm more likely to do that than not. But there are the days when I don't want to. Right? I wake up in that kind of a mood. You know how that goes. So what's the principle that's going to move us forward in this? And it's humility. In humility, remember what my definition of humility that I have discovered is the truth about me. I know who I am, warts and all. I know what my triggers are, if there are such a thing. That's meaning I'm not getting my way. I know what they are. I know what happens like when my security gets interfered with, whether it's emotional or financial. I know how I want to behave. Now I pause and I don't do that. You know, we're going to learn why we don't want to do that. I don't want to trigger a resentment. I don't want to live in fear. And I certainly don't want to cause another harm's done because I don't like making amends. So I don't want to add to the list that we have to talk about. It's actually asking me to do something brand new, and that's accepting life on life's terms. Imagine that. Accepting life on life's terms. Can you accept the emotional discomfort of others? Can you accept the emotional discomfort of new behaviors? Can you accept that? Well, it's being suggested in step 7 that you try it on because this is where the freedom is. So it's emotionally uncomfortable, right? Doesn't last. It passes. And you've walked through the fire. So you do it again and again, and pretty soon you begin to have the knowledge, the real truth about, if I just keep walking, it will. This too shall pass. So when they say this too shall pass, that's what they're talking about, walking through that emotional discomfort of a new behavior, a new idea, somebody else's emotional behavior. It's asking you to just keep walking, talk about it, pay attention to the rumbling, what's rising up for you, what do you want to do, don't do it. Step 7 is all about do what I don't want to do. Step 6 is don't do what I want to do. Step 7 is do what I don't want to do. Starts really simple. Answer the phone, answer the mail, show up on time, do all those kind of things. Don't call out from work if it's not the truth, you know. Okay. Don't write a false check. Don't buy something you can't pay for. Don't borrow money you can't pay back. You know, that kind of stuff. It's asking us to do that. And when we do that, self-seeking slips away. I suddenly had this new attitude about myself. I don't feel like I'm a piece of garbage. I don't feel like I'm worth nothing. I feel like I have value because I am created that value inside out. I become valuable with my partner, my higher power. So the self-seeking slips away. I don't need to seek self. I need to seek you. I need to seek God. I need to do that. I'm neither too big or too small. Gone is the self-entitlement and grandiosity that drove me. I don't need to prove out anything. Truth needs no defense. If it's true, no defense. And let me tell you, I've been on the firing line with people, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to do something new, right? And they don't think it's such a good idea. Just stay in your truth. Make sure the truth is the truth, right? Sometimes they'll say his truth, her truth, the truth, whatever. Find your truth in that situation and stay with it. And you know what else? The greatest thing that happens in step 7 is your shame, your regrets, and your worries disappear. So if you're filled with shame and you have those regrets and you're worried to death that someone's going to find you out, I can tell you, put it in step 6, find out what the behaviors are that supports those, ask God to take them in the 7-step prayer and give you the strength to walk through this uncomfortable new behavior. And you will find that you're going to be free. You'll be free enough to walk into the 8th and 9th step, which is so important to make things right. To make things right spiritually, financially, physically, and with the universe, necessary steps for us to take. Remember, you're not in control. Control is an illusion. We all come in here feeling like we've got to be in control, right? So the first practice you can probably do in step 7 is back off. Right? Just back off. Because you attempt to control, and I can guarantee you're going to fail. Think of all the things you've tried to control. At the end of the day, did they work? Right? So unburden yourself with that demand that you have on yourself to control every situation you meet. What you can do is admit, you know, I just want to really control this. You know, and just step aside for a minute. Call your sponsor, call your network, say, this is what I want to do. Don't do what you want to do. Do what I don't want to do. Oh, that's a really good idea. Follow along, it might be, right? Now, the other thing that comes with step 7, and this is the truth of humility, is that we chose this journey. We're on this journey together. So that means we're a we. We are on this journey. We humbly ask. We are working together. We joined this journey. So honor that, right? The other thing I want to say about control, they can only lead to disharmony with others. Especially right now, I'm looking at the holidays and everything that's coming up, and it's like, oof, my sister's call today. It causes a lot of disharmony. It's like, we all have adult kids now. Let them do what they want to do. If they show up for dinner, great. If they don't show up, great. All the better for me, right? Remember, you're never empty-handed. So as you release one of these behaviors to your power, it's replaced. There's always an X and a Y, right? God never leaves a void, ever. You'll never be empty. I can promise you that. So catching yourself and your shortcomings and changing your reaction takes God. It's going to take God to do this because we can't do it. And it's an internal deal, which is the coolest thing. So like when I'm working with women and we're talking, everybody's story is a little bit different. Everybody's journey is a little bit different. But we all have the same common denominator. We're us. We're separated from God. And the solution's connection with God. That's it. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different journey. But the bottom line, we're trying to get connected with the power so we don't drink and drug, so we can be the best version of who we can be. So that we can do whatever it is that we need to do. And I still don't know exactly what that is, but I do know it's a lot better than it used to be. If that makes any sense at all, right? Okay. So I'm going to move on to step 8. And you might have a bunch of questions, and hopefully we can get them answered shortly. Okay. So step 8, for me, is all about naming the harm. Giving the harm that we have a name to it, right? I made a list of all the people I had harmed. and became willing to make amends to them all. Like, I had trouble writing this down. You know, it was really obvious, you know, some of the people that, you know, I had done the simple things to. But the one that was really hard for me to get my arms around were the harms that were done to me. And I acted out sideways to you. I had a really tough time with all of that. So step 8 is all about relationships. There's no love without forgiveness, and there's no forgiveness without love. I'm going to say that again. There's no love without forgiveness, and there's no forgiveness without love. So consider this. If you never judged and criticized anybody, right, you would have no resentment. And if you had no resentment, there'd be no need for forgiveness. So it goes all the way back to that judgment. So if you never judged and criticized anybody, yourself included, right? Think about that. You never would have created a resentment or harms done from that, and you'd have no need for forgiveness. So the bottom line goes back to this deal with me and my power. Everything's about connection with God. Everything. So what stops me from even dealing with this idea of forgiveness? And I realize that that's four-letter word, you know, that really upsets a lot of people. The problem is guilt. You know, I get to the step 8, and then I look at these things that I've got to go out and make right, right? And I feel so guilty, I don't know how to do it. So we go about, and our book clearly outlines this, we go about and we make a list of all the people we had become ready to make amends to them all. We become ready right here, right now. These people I can do right now. I can take care of that. People, places, institutions. I can do that right now. Maybe in the future I can do them, right? Maybe sometime, I don't know when, I'll do them. But I had 4 people on my list, 5 people on my list that I wasn't putting on any list. So, you know, hours and hours go around with my sponsor, and finally she gave in, and I said, I'm going to create a new column. Never in my planet in this lifetime list. I'll put them on that list. But the craziest thing happens on that. Because I was willing to put them in a column on a list on paper, I was willing to do that because you have most of the names for your 4-step transferred over. We did a study of each one. What was the beginning of that relationship? The middle? Where did it go wrong? What happened? Each one had to have that. I had to have the sacred review, is what she called it, of reviewing where the relationship went wrong. What happened? What was my role in that? What did I do or didn't do? A lot of mine had to do with things I didn't do. I just blew you off and left. Didn't explain it. Didn't go further into it. Caused a lot of harms done. Made a lot of gossiping remarks. I'm sure it got back to you because intentionally that was my intent. Retaliation was big in my story. You know, I did a whole lot of stuff like that. But a lot of it had to do with not doing the right thing. Not showing up when I should have. Not paying that bill when I should have. Not doing things I should have done. And people were harmed because of that. Well, when we were reviewing that, one of my friends calls this the throw-up step. You know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I had to rebuild these relationships, and I could see where my alcoholic behavior, true unrecovered alcoholic behavior, driven by self, and all the fears that I had, driven by self, caused irreparable harm in some cases to these relationships. These people never even wanted to see me again. So before, what do I need to do? Well, I need to have restitution. And restitution doesn't mean I just pay you back the $10. That doesn't mean that. I had to identify how the relationship was damaged in the first place. This took time. You know, this is the 8th step, and this is going to take time. It took me a long time to get through all of the amends that I needed to get through. So I had to keep going back to God and asking to remove my fears and show me the truth. I had to ask him to show me the truth of all the harms that are caused in my behaviors, right? I had to ask him to make me willing to make these amends to one and all. I had to take responsibility for my mistakes. Up until this point, I hadn't really one-on-one in detail wanted to take responsibility in those situations. Overall, yeah. But one-on-one, to identify each and every single character defect and behavior I take, was I willing to take responsibility for them? Because our book says, we attempt to sweep away the debris which accumulated out of my effort to live on self-will and run the show myself. If I haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. So there's telling me, go to God. Go back to God. Ask for the willingness. The willingness and the truth will come. It will. Become willing. So I ask God again. That's page 76 if you're looking for that. God, help me become willing to sweep away the debris of self-will, right? And self-reliant living, right? That thy will be done for this person as well as for me. So I ask for that. So what principles do I need to keep in mind as I'm making those lists and I'm reviewing the story of the relationship that went astray, right? What do I need? I need discipline. I need compassion, right? And I need forgiveness, and willingness is the key. And it's willingness, it's the who of the willingness, the honesty, right, and the openness. The discipline and the action was hard to really nail down. This is a written deal. We write this story out. We share it with our sponsors, right? We continue to, and I ask to remove the barriers that block me from doing this writing, that block me from that spirit, so I can move forward in sober growth, and that's the spiritual growth. Because I'm getting ready to do what, sweep away my side, is what they say, right? So I make a list of all the people we had harmed, both through my actions or inaction. Mine had a lot of doing inaction, and not being present to follow up on my obligations, because I didn't. It's plain and simple, I didn't. I wasn't true to my word. Far from true to my word. The real purpose we hear, right here, is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and our fellows. How can I possibly be that if I've got this guilt right back here? And the magical thing that happened to me in writing this list is I started to feel the freedom of 6 and 7 operating as I'm just writing the list. I began to realize taking accountability and responsibility for my actions was amazing, because I started to see the truth and I stopped doing the things I always did and got what I always got, and I started to form these relationships that even till today are very important in my life, because my whole attitude and outlook, the promises, will change, and it has changed. Mm-hmm. So I'm discovering my lessons in this. I discovered my lessons and what I learned from these relationships, right? I also learned I had to get a life. I had to get my own life. Not your life, my life. I had to get a life. I had to quit living by you, by what you said I was or what I said I did. I had to learn to get a life. You know, when I first came here, I couldn't even tell you what my favorite crayon color was. It would be whatever you wanted it to be. Right? I couldn't tell you what my favorite food to eat was, what my favorite restaurant was, my favorite movie. I didn't have any favorites. You know how they go, you go online and let's say you had a job and they give you all these things to fill out for identification. Like, what street did you live on in third grade? And I'm like, what was your favorite color? Who's your teacher? I can't answer any of those questions. I couldn't answer any of those questions. You know, you live in a blackout for a really long time. You are not participating in your own life. You're in everybody else's life, right? So obsessing about others made me sick. So it says here, naming the harm allowed me to realize this is all about me. I no longer have to look over my shoulder, and I can be the best version of me I can be. So this step 8, on this step 8, I had 5 people on that list, never on this planet in my lifetime list. I'm never going to forgive them. And God is really funny, because you put them on a list and they suddenly start to move over and you start thinking about them. And you start thinking about, you start having memories about situations. Mm-hmm. And you start realizing that forgiveness is the name of the game. Not only did I have to forgive myself, because a lot of it had to do with things done to me, and then I did them to you, because I couldn't face you who did it to me. Follow? Okay, so it came out sideways. So my family was harmed. My kids were harmed. My friends were harmed. Because I was angry at this dude over here. So it came out sideways, and I had to clean all that up, because that was a power. I'd given my power, if that's such a word, somebody else. No human power could relieve me from alcoholism. No ABCs. No human power. I gave all my human power to the outside of me. Mm-hmm. I gave it to money. I gave it to men. I gave it to sex. I gave it to whatever would take it. I gave it to booze. I gave it to drugs. I gave it. Now I don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Seeing clearly that was a never-ending story. That was hitting the wall. So I don't ever have to look over my shoulder. And those people that moved over, I've had the most incredible experience of making amends because I put them on that list. And God just makes these, all of a sudden you see them. You haven't seen them in years. And they show up at the grocery store, or you're at a gas station, or you're at the mall, or you're somewhere, the post office, and you bump into somebody that's on that list. Because I became willing to see, I could walk up to them and I said, hey, how are you? You know, I'm really sorry about our relationship. And I'm able, because I can clearly tell you, because I know what happened. It's clear. It's perfectly clear. With someone else on my mind, I missed my own lesson. Meaning that I was so paying attention, let's say, to you. I'm paying attention to you, only you. I'm forgetting totally about my own job, my own responsibilities. And I can't hear my inner voice, that inner voice of guidance that we all have, right? If my mind is on somebody else. Obsessing on everybody else is going to make us sick. I can tell you right here, you no longer have to look over your shoulder when you start doing this. And I haven't even made the amends yet. And I'm starting to feel lighter. I'm starting to feel full of grace, actually. Right? So I went to chasing that, to finding it. I was always chasing this. And I found it. It was all inside me all along. So this making amends. Oh, I have a few minutes. So make direct amends. I am not kidding. When they say direct, they mean direct, if it ever possible. That means face-to-face, one-on-one. That doesn't mean email. That doesn't mean text. That doesn't mean any of that. That doesn't mean a letter. That means face-to-face. If I cause the harm face-to-face, I go make the amends face-to-face, no matter what, right? So there's freedom gained in cleaning up. There's a lot of freedom gained in living peacefully in the present. Steps 8 and 9 let you live right here, right now, which is something that we have not been able to do, right? So what stops me from doing it? It's my expectations. That if I see me, you're going to throw me out. I have a story after the story after story. I'm sure we all do. So my ego will keep me from doing this. Why should I do that anyway? Right? Well, if you want the true freedom, if you want the fireworks, you're going to do it, right? So what do we need? We need kindness, tolerance, and love. You need that for yourself, and you need that for everybody you meet. Kindness, tolerance, and love. So in my step 9 prayer, I ask for the right attitude. I ask for the right attitude that I walk in to talk to you, to see you, to be with you, that I have the right attitude and the truth about exactly what we're about to do. You know, I do the card thing. You know, I know you've had a lot of people come here and talk about that. This is just taking it from a different angle. And we did that, and I had my amends cards with me. You don't take them in, of course, but I knew exactly what I needed to say. Exactly what I needed to say. I didn't want to repeat those behaviors. I wanted to be as honest as I could about making those amends. I had no idea the harm I caused in my marriage till I did this kind of work. I had no idea what the consequences of what I was doing, just trying to be in control, what it did to another human being. You know, it was belittling to them. Not only that, but it stole their emotional security. So I began to understand that, you know, how I was not tolerant and kind. I needed it done my way so I'd be comfortable. Do you know what I mean? So asking for forgiveness for those who intentionally or unintentionally injured us is a really tough place to go, right? And one of those people that I had to do that with was my dad. A key point that I learned about this was not to connect those injuries, right, to everything else. They were a separate situation. My dad was an abusive father. He was a drunk, and when he drank, he was abusive. When he didn't drink, he was funny. He was kind. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about some Christmas memories. I was thinking about the time he said, hey, you want to help me make a sleigh? And we got out the jigsaw and we he made this thing out of board and we painted it all red, and it stayed on our porch for many years. I was thinking about some of the kind things that happened, but on the most part, his alcoholism took over our family. That stuff kind of went by the wayside. So he was on my eighth, never in this planet, my planet list. And little by slowly, things started to happen. My daughter ended up going to school where he lived. And I thought, God, that's really funny. I can't even talk to this dude. We started talking about the weather, and that's where I learned how to be a good daughter. I didn't know how to do that. So my sponsor said, well, you need to like call on birthdays, like on their birthday. Imagine that. On Christmas, on holidays, and when asked to show up, when summoned, show up. So when asked to go out and do something, you know, come visit a family thing, go. I started to do those things. One of the things they used to do, trying to put a blended family together, you know, he took off with my mother's best friend. Didn't talk to him for 15 years. I was livid. And one of the greatest things that happened was the opportunity to be present and to see the actual love between my dad and my stepmother. I never witnessed that between my dad and my mom, ever. I never saw it. Had I not had the opportunity of having him on that list, I probably never would have seen it. And having that relationship grow in time, and having it grow to the place where, I don't know, I was like 23 years sober when we finally had a conversation and he made amends to me. It's an amazing feeling, having an amends. And I kept thinking all along, I'm doing all these things they're telling me to do. You know, okay, all right, I guess that's all it's going to be. But I desperately wanted a relationship with my dad. I just didn't know how to have it. I didn't know how to, we all want a relationship. And I didn't know how to have it. And God just made that possible. And at the end of that, he said, what can I do? What can I do for you? And I said, call me once in a while. And he did. He called me once a week until he couldn't call me once a week. He got sick. He recently passed. But he called once a week and he'd ask me how I was doing. Now, I wanted this my whole life. Alcoholism took that away. But guess what? Steps 8 and 9 brought it back. Mm-hmm. And God made that possible. So the fear of people and insecurity started to leave me. So the practice right here with step 9 is don't do any verbal harm. Don't do any harm. Stop. If you're doing it, just don't do it. Just walk away. Don't say a word. Mm-hmm. Right? Make a daily commitment to that. Mm-hmm. Right? Criticism isn't loving. Refrain from the criticism. Don't do any physical harm. No physical harm. If you want to push, don't. Walk away. Right? Always choose to be helpful, not hurtful. And this is going to take a whole new attitude and outlook, but it comes with us as we go on. And you give up arguing one argument at a time. I'll leave it right like that. Okay, that's all I have for tonight.